Nishmini.
I will tell you, Director Deutsch, as a former Los Angeles police narcotics detective, that the agency has dealt drugs throughout this country for a long time.
Don't give me the conspiracy bullshit. Come on. You're a more intelligent man than that. Come on.
Drogerija, oddaja o vojni proti drogam, reguliranih zdravilih, ljudeh in družbah, ki uživajo te ali one psihoaktivne snovi. Drogerija, vsako drugo nedeljo opoldne na Radiu Študent. Drage poslušalke, cenjeni poslušalci, lep pozdrav v oddaji Drogerija. Današnji dan predvajamo pogovor z Jeremyjem Narbijem, ki smo ga včeraj posneli na konferenci, ki se je odvijala v Ljubljani in se še danes o spremenjenih stanjih zavesti. Jeremy Narby, naš današnji sogovornik, je antropolog, doktoriral je na Stanford University, drugač pa dela danes pri organizaciji Novel Planet, švicarski organizaciji, ki se ukvarja predvsem z domorodnimi okolji in pa njihovimi pravicami, organizira projekte, kateri so namenjeni njihovi samostojnosti, k povečevanju samostojnosti teh domorodnih krajev, ne pa odvisnosti od njihovih širših okolj. Jeremy Narby je antropolog, ki je prvič prispel v brazilsko porečje pred več kot 20 leti in preživel tudi kar dosti let z predvsem enim plemenom Ašaninka, pleme iz perujskega dela Amazonke pri meji z Brazilijo in tam seveda se naučil mnogo od njihove kulture in njihovega načina spoznavanja okolja. In o tem seveda danes tudi teče pogovor, predvsem pa o njihovi poglavitnem orodju za doseganje znanja in to je ayahuasca, zmes vsaj dveh rastlin, ki je pač ena izmed najmočnejših halucinogenih snovi ali pa enteogenov, kakorkoli jih že imenujemo, ki danes obstajajo. Jeremy Narby je napisal 3 knjige z našega področja. Prva, Kozmična kača, DNK in pa Izvor znanja. V tej utemeljuje, da sta Axis Mundi, prepletena kača ali pa prepletena trta ali pa stopnišče, lestev in tako naprej, ima mnogo skupnega z tem, kar so naši znanstveniki odkrili leta 1953, torej DNK. O tem se govori, napisuje še knjigo Šamani skozi čas, 500 let šamanizma in pa njegova zadnja knjiga Inteligenca v naravi. Jeremy Narby.
It's almost more than 2 decades, I believe, that when you first came to South America and you came there as an anthropologist, a Marxist anthropologist.
Correct.
With probably a set of beliefs and what you can do for those people over there.
Exactly.
How you can help them. But since then you embarked on an investigation we could sum it up as what intelligence really is. And of course you saw that there are different perspectives and means to attain intelligence. And maybe if we could start off with what kind of intelligence people in the Amazon, in the Amazon basin where you've been and spent quite a lot of years have, and how does it differ from the Western perspective?
Well, it's true that in the Amazon, the indigenous people who live there, when they look at plants and animals, they see something other than what many Western people have seen in recent centuries. In other words, the approach to knowledge here in the West has put an emphasis on objectivity. And in fact, what that word means is relative to the object. So we have treated plants and animals like objects with our objective knowledge. Well, in the Amazon, they see plants and animals as persons, as having personalities. Each species obviously has a different personality, and as filled with intelligence. So they do not have a mechanical view of nature. They have a intersubjective, personal view of nature. They do not put a boundary between humans and other species. In fact, they ascribe humanity to all the other species. So there's no artificial, arbitrary line somehow cutting humans off from other species. And that's one of the first things that's interesting, is that when you go towards a radically different way of looking at the world, you come up upon your own presuppositions or the limits of your own system of knowledge. In other words, when you, as an anthropologist, live with people who think that plants and animals are people, then you have to think, okay, well, in my culture, we don't do it that way. In fact, in my culture, we have a whole list of characteristics that we think make us different from other species. So, and actually, it's what's interesting is that in recent years, science itself has been reconsidering the list of what is specific to humans. Western culture, Judeo-Christian rationalist culture, has been obsessed with what is specific to humans. So there's a list of only humans make tools, humans have intelligence, humans can are capable of abstraction. These are the kinds of things that we're supposed to make us unique. It turns out that science has demonstrated recently that even invertebrate bees with brains the size of a grain of salt can handle abstract concepts. Even birds can make standardized tools with hooks. All species communicate, I mean, maybe not in a European language. Actually, plants do a lot of their communication with chemistry. You know, so it's not a human language, it's with chemicals. It turns out that the signals, the cells in our own body also communicate with approximately 11,000 molecular signals. So anyway, when as a Westerner you end up in the Amazon dealing with a different approach to understanding the world we're in, it does make you reconsider how we know, how we look at things, what is knowledge, what is a plant, how do I know what I know about a plant, about an animal, or about myself. So. Yeah, the experience of going to the Amazon and living with indigenous Amazonian people and trying to understand how they think about nature and humanity's place in nature has been extremely stimulating.
Mm-hmm. Maybe it's also meaningful to mention we don't need to have such a clear cut between the Western culture and shamanism to see this difference in perceiving intelligence. In your newest book, Intelligence in Nature, you also talk about the Japanese science and their means of trying to understand nature and how they investigate chimpanzees, which mm-hmm. is completely different than mm-hmm. the Western perspective.
Yes, well, actually, in not just Japanese scientists, but also scientists in the West in recent years or even recent decades have started breaking away from the mechanical, objectifying view of nature and have started to investigate how amoebas can solve mazes or well, how bees can handle abstract concepts, or even just how a blade of grass goes about being a blade of grass. In fact, integrating all kinds of information about its circumstances and transducing it into electrochemical information that its cells send one another. It turns out that a blade of grass operates in a very similar way to the way that a human brain operates. And this is the data that science is now revealing. One could say that science has reached sufficient sophistication as to be generating data that calls into question its own presuppositions. Mm-hmm. It is true that, for example, Japanese scientists asked questions of nature several decades before Western scientists, because they were not coming out of a Judeo-Christian tradition. Actually, in Japan, the cultural presuppositions is Shintoist animist. For Japanese people, there never was an arbitrary boundary between humans and other species, and they have always ascribed a capacity to know, which they call chi sei, to other species. It just seems obvious that monkeys and any living species has a capacity to know in Japanese culture. And so, for example, in the study of primates, of monkeys and so on, already in the 1940s and 1950s, Japanese primatologists were studying individual monkeys and thinking of them as individuals and seeing kinship. I mean, kinship was supposed to be something that only human beings had. That's what Western scientists presupposed. And when Japanese scientists said, no, one can also study a group of macaques as if they were humans and look at their kinship relations, in the West, everybody said, that's crazy. You know, that kinship is only human. But it turns out that the Japanese scientists were right, and that many of the things that that these monkeys do is articulated through kinship. I mean, one thing that it was thought that only humans have culture. In other words, behaviors that you can learn and transmit. Well, the Japanese started observing monkeys that would invent techniques and then teach them to the members of their kin group. And, you know, the evidence was just the evidence. There's a famous case of the researchers would give potatoes to these monkeys living in the wild. The potatoes would get covered in sand. And so potatoes were new, obviously, to these macaques. One macaque was observed figuring out that if you floated the potatoes in water, you could get rid of the sand, and then you could eat them. And then this macaque was observed showing this technique to the to other macaques. And so what we had is the innovation, the discovery of a new technique, and its transmission, in other words, culture. And Japanese scientists discovered the existence of animal culture decades before Westerners thought it was even a possibility or a legitimate question. Now it's become an official subject of research. That's also one of the beauties of science. I mean, science certainly carries the prejudices of the culture out of which it has emerged, but science is also, it's first and foremost the endeavor to stick to the data. So, you know, when you see enough monkeys learning behaviors and transmitting it, and enough birds that are making tools, and enough bees that are clearly handling abstract concepts, then at that point, science has to admit that that this exists. And I think actually that for Westerners, one of the ways of breaking out of the limits of our own culture is to use our way of going about knowledge, which is science, and using, putting ourselves in front of what science has revealed and thinking about it. I mean, you know, one thing that since Darwin, but also since the molecular biology of the 20th century, that has become clear through science is that we have kinship with every other species in the world. It is a literal truth that the DNA molecules in my cells are copies of copies of copies of DNA molecules that go all the way back to a bacterium 4 billion years ago, and that this whole chain of biological life that has been existing on Earth all this time is actually my family, and that I am connected to them all through kinship. That, you know, and so this is actually what shamans and animists have been saying for thousands of years. And science is now confirming this and revealing this. Mm-hmm.
And maybe before we go more deeply into this question of DNA, which you've investigated extensively, is, well, one way of finding DNA was through a microscope, and many have linked the tool of the shamans, which you're also acquainted with quite well, ayahuasca, a mixture of at least two plants, to be also a microscope in some ways, and to go even further than the metaphor for the microscope for the shaman. Mm-hmm. So could you explain what ayahuasca is for the shamans in for instance, the tribe that you've spent so much time with, the
Ashaninka. Yeah, well, when you go and hang out with, for example, Ashaninka Indians in the Peruvian Amazon, and you ask them how they know what they know about plants, for example, they say, we have ayahuasqueros or tabaqueros or shamans, and they take ayahuasca, which is a hallucinogenic plant mixture, or they eat tobacco concentrate, and this gives them visions. And in their visions, what they perceive are the essences that are common to all life forms and that are sources of information. And they associate these essences with a form that historians of religion call the Axis Mundi, and that is shaped like a twisted ladder or two entwined serpents. Ayahuasca in the Amazonian approach to knowledge is the main tool that allows you to get in touch with the reality that is under the surface of appearances and that somehow determines our lives. It allows you to transcend the communication barrier that separates us from other species and to not only perceive their essence, but to communicate with them. So it is the number one tool for gaining knowledge about plants and animals. And it's exactly analogous to what a microscope is to a biologist. So it's the primordial tool for gaining knowledge about other species.
Could you say also, there has been a lot of discussion today, they say that it's all the same. You've written a book, 500 Years of Shamanism, mm-hmm. and you've gone through a lot of different cultures mm-hmm. where shamanism has been around and still is. But these tools, from breathing techniques to dancing to meditation
yeah.
to eating some substance,
uh-huh.
how do they differ in their essences, in their effects?
Yeah. Well, that's a good question. I think it needs unpacking a little bit. In fact, shamanism is a creation of anthropologists and European observers. It's a label that has been put on many different techniques from many different cultures in many different environments. And it corresponded historically to what Europeans didn't understand. So anything involving trance states attained by different means that seem to be the contrary of rational knowledge, we're going to call it shamanism. And it kind of looks like a coherent thing, but it's actually many different techniques. As an anthropologist who works in the Amazon with indigenous people in trying to help them protect their territories and their systems of knowledge, it's true that my main experience with these questions has been with the Amazonian techniques, which are really centered on the use of psychoactive plants. And the Western Amazon is no doubt the world capital of hallucinogenic plants and their use for knowledge by indigenous people. I don't really have experience with other so-called shamanic techniques. I haven't been to Australia, I don't know about the Dreamtime, I haven't been to Siberia, I haven't practiced drumming, I've read some books and so on. But to answer your question, I would quote the anthropologist Michael Harner and what he told me. He is the first anthropologist to have written about his ayahuasca experience. He lived with Jivaroan and Shipibo people in the late 1950s and early 1960s, and that's where he was initiated to shamanism through ayahuasca. And then he became interested in shamanism this way. He wanted to find a technique that would not require the use of a plant or a substance, or let's call it a drug. And so he studied the Siberian technique of inducing trance through a hypnotic drum beat. And he made a kind of transcultural method of neo-shamanism, which is the Harner method, and it's based on banging on a drum at a certain rhythm and going into a trance that way and visualizing a rhythmically inspired visualization is the technique. Well, I asked him how he compares the two methods, and he said, well, ayahuasca no doubt is a shortcut, and it also allows you to go in deeper. Yes, it's similar. You go into trance, but the trance that you go into with the ayahuasca is deeper than the one that you go into with the drum, and that is no doubt why you see more reptiles and serpents with the ayahuasca than you do with the drum. So, if Michael Harner says so, I guess it's true.
Se opravičujem za malo dodatnih zvokov, veter je pihal ob pogovoru. Jeremy Narby je v začetku povedal, da se seveda cel odnos do okolja popolnoma različna, en teži k objektivnosti, zahodni sistem, med tem, ko šamanski, pa kot je razložil tudi japonski, na primer, ki ni bil podvržen judokrščanski zgodovini, tradiciji, teži k subjektivnemu dojemanju okolja in pa vseh drugih živih biti, torej jim prilaščajo čisto človeške značilnosti, kot recimo so Japonci že v 40-ih letih proučevali primate, s tem, da so jim, da so opazovali njihovo obnašanje na tistih nivojih, ki so čisto človeške, kot so družinske vezi in tako naprej. Sama znanost pa je tudi medtem, ko se je zahodna trudila inteligenco postaviti na pedestal, ki se pritiče samo človeku in je s tem morala vedno spreminjati, kaj točno je značilno za to, ali je to jezik, pa se je ugotovilo, da imajo že najnižje vrste, kot jih pojmujemo bakterije, svoj jezik, s katerim se sporazumevajo, še več esperanto, v katerem se lahko 600 različnih vrst bakterij sporazumeva, medtem ko imajo svoj lastni jezik za svoje lastne skupine, skupnosti, pa potem uporaba orodij, pa se je ugotovil, da uporabljajo že ptiči orodja in tako naprej, skratka, ta lista se je vedno dograjevala do sedanjih zadnjih poskusov v zadnjih 5-10 letih, ko so biologi dejansko tudi na strokovni ravni prišli do tega, da je pač inteligenca neka stvar, ki se pritiče vseh živih organizmov na tem svetu. Potem je bilo še nekaj kratkega o tem, ali so druge tehnike enako učinkovite pri spostavljanju te druge pozornosti, transcendence, torej zamaknjenosti v drugo, v tisto neko drugo dojemanje, v katerega padajo šamani. In sicer Jeremy Narby nima izkušen z tehnikami, pri katerih se ne bi uporabljale psihoaktivne snovi, je pa mnenja, da je Michael Harner, antropolog, ki je bil podučen v oziroma izkušen v obeh dveh in tako v uživanju ajuaske kot v sibirskih tehnikah igranja na bobne, da je njegov zaključek ta, ki je najbolj realen in sicer, da je seveda trans mogočna pri obeh dveh tehnikah, vendar pa je ta, kjer uporabljaš na primer ajuasko, veliko globji, močnejši, bolj živ pri dojemanju. V naslednjem delo pa bo Jeremy Narby razložil, pač kakšen se mu zdi odnos zahodnega sveta do šamanizma. Zatiral se je skozi stoletja, tisočletja, skozi inkvizicijo, skozi moderno državo. V zadnjem času pa seveda obstaja en kup ljudi, že v 60-ih Timofiliri, za svojo idejo, da bo LSD, da je LSD ta magična stvar, ki bo ozdravila zahodnega človeka od svojih zablod in spostavila neko harmonijo na tem svetu, pa do vseh new agerskih idej, ki izgledajo na te snovi bolj skrajno pozitivno, kot pa kako drugače.
Well, you know, I can't speak for the shamans of the Amazon, but I can say what I think about that. Clearly, for hundreds of years, we denigrated this approach to gaining knowledge. Now there are people who are putting it on a pedestal. and it's the contrary. In other words, instead of being bad knowledge or devil's knowledge or so on, suddenly, shamans, they're in touch with nature and they're healing. And so instead of denigrating them, we're putting them on a pedestal. But actually, in the Amazon, when you speak with shamans and people who are not shamans but who are in communities where there are shamans, they will all tell you that there is a dark side to what shamans do, to their power and to their knowledge, and that the role of the community is to keep an eye on the shaman. What is a little bit troubling with the exporting of shamanic plants and shamanic techniques here into the West is that the dark side or shadow side of these plants and also of these techniques and in fact of the human psyche, because it's the human psyche that is using these plants and techniques, it gets edited out. I think that putting shamans on a pedestal is just the other side of the same coin denigrating them. And the point is to move beyond this kind of colonial approach. I mean, obviously, I think having a romantic perspective that puts shamans on pedestals is better than just smashing them, but it's still the other side of the same coin. And the point is to move beyond that and to open up true dialogue between human beings, in other words, colleagues. You know, scientists and shamans and ordinary people, let's just say the citizens of the world, we're all Homo sapiens sapiens. We have different perspectives. We have different pieces of the puzzle. And the point now is to forget the pedestals. Forget smashing people. Let's open up honest dialogue between adults in the 21st century.
Jeremy Narby pa je eden od tistih redkih znanstvenikov, antropologov, ki se resnično trudi k spostavljanju tega dialoga med znanostjo in pa tem telesom znanja, ki ga poseduje ta romantični šamanski svet, ki ga želi demistificirati in pa postaviti v neko normalne okvirje človeškega dojemanja. Jeremy Narby je postal predvsem zanimiv za širše množice in pa za znanstvenike skozi svoje primerjave sicer različnih jezikov, ampak enakih pojmovanj med znanostjo in šamani. Najbolj je presenetil s tem, da povezuje odkritje DNK-ja na zahodu z potovanji šamanov na molekularno raven, kjer odkrivajo bolezni tistih, ki pač pridejo k njim po pomoč. In malo več o tej temi, kako on gleda na DNK in zakaj in kako naj bi šamani tudi posedovali znanje o letemu in pa o njegovih naporih in pa prvih pozitivnih rezultatih sodelovanja med znanstveniki in pa šamani bo povedal v naslednjih trenutkih.
What shamans in the Amazon say, but actually shamans around the world also say, is that in their visions they perceive essences or spirits or mothers or entities, they use different words, that are common to all life forms and that are sources of information. So, and it is these entities that make the kinship between ourselves and other species and means that we can communicate with them and so on. Well, I was just trying to make sense of these concepts and look for an equivalent concept in rational knowledge. Well, it turns out that since 1953, that is exactly what scientists have been saying. They're saying, under the surface of different beings, you go in there and there are cells, and when you go inside every cell of every living being, inside the nucleus, what you find is this extremely long, double helix-shaped molecule that is also a text, and that is just filled with information. And actually, DNA molecules are the same from one organism to another. The only thing that changes is the order of the letters. So here is an exactly analogous concept generated by science after the 1950s that corresponds on multiple levels to what shamans around the world have been saying for thousands of years. Maybe it's more complicated than that. I proposed to do a double reading. Here is what molecular biologists are saying, and here is what shamans are saying. It would seem that they're talking about the same reality, but from a different perspective. Now, if scientists really want to be the ones who come out as like the winners and who are better than everybody, okay. It is true that through rational science, they put their finger on the physico-chemical manifestation of this entity that is shaped like that. And now the double helix has become the sign of molecular biology. But actually, that sign, that twisted ladder shape, is the sign of shamans around the world on five continents and has been for thousands of years. And I'm not the one who says it. Historians of religion who compared the world religions are the ones who point this out. Now, what we want to make of this correspondence is actually a question. I formulated a hypothesis that what this correspondence may indicate is that biomolecular information can be obtained from visions orchestrated by an indigenous shaman. So the point, if we're going to follow the method of science, is to test the hypothesis. So on several occasions, I have accompanied molecular biologists and also a medical researcher looking with a question in their scientific research. For the moment, they've not been able to find the answer by, let's say, conventional means. So they've been working for years on a given question. All the high tech tools that we have, we haven't found a solution yet. Well, maybe if we try this alternative path, they might come up with some new ideas and some new hypotheses. Most recently, I took one of the world's leading tuberculosis researchers to work with the Amazon shaman. Tuberculosis kills mainly poor people. It's not a disease that interests the big pharmaceutical companies because it's a poor people's disease. Nevertheless, 2 million people every year, and the number is growing, are dying. So this guy runs the Institute for Tuberculosis Research at the University of Illinois Chicago, and after years of fruitless investigation, all he wants to do is find a substance or a plant that can cure this disease. Well, it turns out that that's what shamans want to do too. Common ground is really easy. And where are there most plants in the world? It's in the Amazon forest. This is by far the richest of the plants. So it actually does make sense to take one scientific researcher to go and have a conversation with one indigenous shaman and to work on one illness to see if we can come up with one or two plants that might have an effect. For the good of humanity. So that's what we did. And actually, it was surprisingly easy because the ayahuasca shaman said, oh, you're looking for a remedy for tuberculosis. Why, I actually have one here because I've had tuberculosis patients and I've taken ayahuasca with my patients, and in their presence, the ayahuasca showed me a plant, which is a vine that grows in inundated forest in a precise place. That is called boahuasca locally, but that for the moment has not been identified by science. In other words, it does not have a Latin name.
It does not exist for the West.
Not yet. But anyhow, the scientist took this vine extract back to the lab in Chicago, and preliminary research on mice confirms that it has anti-tuberculosis activity. Mm-hmm. But more research is needed, and there's all kinds. Bringing science and shamanism together, at least on paper, as I'm talking about it now, sounds easy. But every time I've tried it, unimaginable difficulties crop up. Like getting a rainforest shaman and a university research department on the same page, literally. I mean, you got to fill out paperwork, and then you know, try importing a plant into the United States that does not have a Latin name. Well, this goes under the Bioterrorism Act. And, you know, so for the moment, actually, the research is kind of stalled for this kind of incompatibility between, because in the Peruvian Amazon, it's easy. You go and see the ayahuasca shaman, you have a disease, he finds a plant according to what the visions say, and then you work with it, you know. There is no bioterrorism bureaucracy. So, but you know, the conclusion for the moment is by the small attempts that have been made for the moment of getting over our prejudices and bringing shamans and scientists together, you know, looking for remedies or looking for knowledge. For the moment, it has been fruitful but difficult. And the conclusion, temporary conclusion, is that more research is needed.
Drage poslušalke, cenjeni poslušalci, to je bilo to za danes. Pogovarjali smo se z Jeremijem Narbijem, antropologom, ki se tudi trudi povezovati znanje šamanov in pa znanje znanstvenikov in jih spraviti na en kup, da se bodo lahko nadgradili drug drugega. Lep pozdrav vsem tudi v Pivko, kjer nas danes poslušajo, kjer imajo tudi radijski sprejemnik. Lep pozdrav od naše ekipe iz Radio Študent. Lep pozdrav, nasvidnje.
Nišmini.
I will tell you, Director Deutsch, as a former Los Angeles police narcotics detective, that the agency has dealt drugs throughout this country for a long time.
Don't give me the conspiracy bullshit. Come on. You're a more intelligent man than that. What? Come on, come on.
Drogerija, oddaja vojni proti drogam, reguliranih zdravilih, ljudeh in družbah, ki uživajo te ali one psihoaktivne snovi. Drogerija, vsako drugo nedeljo opoldne na Radiu Študent.